You're listening to a Why Now podcast.
This is the Worldwide Will Show on whynow.co.uk. I'm your host, Will. I'm a British Army veteran of just short of 11 years and serve numerous tours of Afghanistan. In this show, I'll be speaking to former members of the British Armed Forces and Coalition Forces, giving them a platform of which to tell their life story, as well as experiences and how it's affected them. I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the Worldwide Will Show. I'm joined by...
Andy Reid, MBE.
Thank you. Oh, MBE. Thanks for coming in, buddy. As you guys know, this podcast is designed to tell people's life story. I believe everyone's life is a story, and it's down to them to tell it. So here we are. Where did it all start, mate?
Yeah, well, I suppose it started back in the day, born in Birkenhead.
Yeah.
Left there quite sharply. I'm not even sure why I was born there, to be honest. But then moved to St. Helens.
Yeah.
When I was about seven, so yep. I just class myself as being...
You're St. Helens fan?
Being from St. Helens, big St. Helens Rugby League fan, yeah. They're obviously the current champions, but not on the best form at the moment. But I got a season ticket, so I'll go there, watch the game. Mm-hmm. Probably don't watch as much of the game as I probably should. Probably more socialising and networking and all that kind of good stuff in the bar area.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, big fan. And I used to go travel back when I was in the forces. Mm-hmm. I'd travel back home on a Friday night.
So is that where you grew up?
St. Helens, yeah. So that's where I went to school and all the rest of it.
Good kid? Troublesome?
Yeah, not the best start of school, to be honest. Started back in the day at 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I was in a motorbike and sidecar and travelling to my grandparents' house, and a drunk driver crashed into it.
Fucking hell.
So I broke my leg in three places. My sister broke her pelvis. My mum got her ankle crushed. And then my dad was okay, actually. Got thrown off the bike, cut some bruises or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then got passed around the family for about a year. Mm-hmm. My dad was working, mum was in hospital. So I kind of missed my first year at school.
Yeah.
So I think that put me on the back foot with dyslexia and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the day, they had the old chalkboard and they write on there, and I'd be copying it word for word, letter for letter. But and then all of a sudden they move the board and I'd be about four or five sentences behind. Yeah. Start again, they move the board again, just think, whatever.
Yeah.
Just start messing about, a bit disruptive. So I got asked to leave school in the third year at senior school. Mm-hmm. Which looked better than being expelled, to be honest, being asked to leave. So I weren't too concerned. But at about 10 or 11, I remember chatting to my grandfather around at their house on a Sunday, having Sunday dinner. And I used to go under the stairs at my grandparents' house, like a little cupboard. Mm-hmm. And in there was hats and handbags and that. And my sister used to get my grandma's handbag and a coat and do whatever they were doing. And I always remember this, like... our army jacket was in there, like an olive green jacket and an old like scarf and an old shemagh, what we still have now for wrapping your banners up in and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Put that around my neck and then run around the garden and pretend to be in the army, rolling around and shouting bang and that. And then come inside and sit down with grandfather and just tell these amazing stories of when he was in the Second World War.
Wow.
You know, he was in the Royal Tank Regiment and he went all through Egypt, Italy, Battle of Toulouse, come back to the UK.
Got amongst it then.
Back on the D-Day. Yeah, so I've got all his medals and that. Yeah. So I thought, when I grew up, I'm going to follow his footsteps and join the armed forces. Mm-hmm. So when I was at school, I was messing about a lot, thinking, well, it doesn't matter because I'm going to join the army.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep yourself fit, do you know what I mean? So, yeah, left at 16, school, that is. Went down to the Crees office in St. Helens. Knocked on the door, I remember. Big guy comes to the door, big red sash on his chest, to do stripes on his arm.
Yeah.
Got issued that chest. We must have got issued the chest from the CQMS to do. And as I said, all right, mate. I said, I want to join the army. Obviously, first of all, he said, don't call me mate again. I'm a sergeant. Like, oh, all right, sergeant, sorry about that. He said, right, what regiment do you want to join? I said, I'm not even thought about it, to be honest. I said, my grandmother in the Royal Tank Regiment. I said, but, you know, what regiment are you in? He said, I'm in the Queen's Lancashire Regiment, infantry. So that sounds good. So I said, I'll join them.
Yeah, yeah.
She said,
local regiment.
Local regiment, yeah. But I chat to a few people. They said, you know, join your local regiment. People then coming home, as you are after the weekend, watching the game. Mm-hmm. Maybe some other Saints fans there. You're all from up north, which is more important than anything. You know, so join your local regiment. And that's why they do have local regiments, don't we? You know, they've got that common bond with the people already. So went to join the Queen's Lancashire Regiment. Did the old test on the computer.
Yep.
Luckily for me, it was a multiple choice test back then. I don't know if it still is, but that's probably the only reason why I got through the test, probably. Just guessing, you know, A, B, C, D.
Was it Barb test or was it before?
Barb test, I think. Barb test, like multiple choice thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Guess the shapes, running, where's that ball going to land and all that kind of stuff, yeah. Got through that, and then he took my medical, took my height, I think back then I was about 5'11". I'm about 5'8" now, maybe a bit smaller. I don't mind saying much. I wear shorts all the time so it don't matter. And then took my weight, and I was about 9.5 stone. So he said, like, listen, Mr. Reed, you're underweight for your height. Mm-hmm. He said, you're going to have to go away and put some and weight eat. On. No, I'm 9.5 stone, but I was 16, you know what I mean? I was running around.
Just a kid.
Playing rugby, keeping myself fit. So I walked away very angry at myself, very disappointed. Known since I was 10 or 11, mm-hmm. I wanted to join the army. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should have looked into it a little bit more. But I just thought, keep yourself fit. You'll get in. I didn't think eat loads of pies. You'll get in. My concept of the army would be fit. You know what I mean? So I went away and I'm thinking, what am I going to do with myself? You know, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I've no plan B. I've no qualifications. Mm-hmm. You know, my mate got expelled from the same school as what I did. And he got working for Pilkington's Glass straight away. Back in the day, massive glass company in St. Helens. Mm-hmm. If your dad works there or your uncle works there, you're in. And I went for an interview and I didn't get in. I'm thinking, well, I've got the same qualifications as him. None. So if he's got in, why can't I get in? So then I just thought, like, what can I do? So it is a true story, this, right, honestly.
Good.
So I thought my mate said, right, his uncle's in the army. He was in the QLR. So he said, give him a ring. He said, you never know, we might tell you how to do some weights or do whatever you need to do to get in. So I rang him. He said, right, get a day sack, put some bricks in it. He said, go tabbing about. I'm like, what's tabbing, mate? I haven't got a clue what that is. And it's like fast walking. So I said, right, so get a day sack, put some bricks in it, and go fast walking. He said, yeah. He said, go to the gym, do some weights. I went, yeah. He said, but more importantly, he said, book another test for about 3 weeks' time. He said, on the morning of the test, drink 9 pints of water. I was like, what? She said, drink 9 pints of water, get him inside you, get down there. When you're on the scales, you'll be the right weight.
Yeah.
Said, when you join up, you know, you can bulk up, put in extra meals and whatever. I said, brilliant, yeah. So I bought this test for 3 weeks' time. Morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, on the kitchen worktop, 9 pints of water. Smashing it down my neck, mate. Oh, it was hard.
It was
hard work, yeah. But nine pints of beer on a Friday, that's achievable, isn't it? But, yeah, 9 pints of water. So I got the bus down there anyway. And got down there for like 10 to 10, and 10 o'clock appointment, and knocked on the door.
Dying for a piss.
Yeah, sergeant comes to the door again. He said, oh, Mr. Reed, you've come back. I said, yeah. So I've been smashing some weights out, Anna. And he went, right, well, come in. He said, running about 15 minutes late. He said, have a sit down over there. So I sat down. I was like, I don't go to the toilet in a minute. I'm obviously going to piss myself. I thought, that won't be the best impression that I want to do. So I went to the little boy's room, and as soon as I come out, he's like, all right, come on, get on these scales. So I walked over and he looked down and went, you're 9.5 stone. I said, oh, these scales must be broken. He said, no, none of these scales. If you want to join the army, you need to go away, get yourself to the gym, bulk yourself up, and then come back. So I thought, what can I do? So I went and got a job as a labourer. Doing a bit of labouring, carrying sand and cement around, doing a bit of curbing, all that kind of stuff. Did that for a bit. Didn't like being outdoors, to be honest, getting wet. So I don't know why I wanted to join up, but yeah, it weren't the best job in the winter on the building site. You know, it's hard graft, isn't it?
It's hard graft just being on a site, alone.
Especially when you're set up when you're 16 and you're getting bossed around everywhere as well. But did it for a bit. Then I got a job in a sausage factory, making sausages. You got free sausages, so that helps a little bit, put a bit of weight on. And then I got a job as a forklift truck driver. I ended up on the dole for a bit, living in a council flat for a while. Life was tough, you know, the realities of Civvy Street, you know.
Especially in those years as well.
Yeah, that would have been, 94, something like that. It was tough times back then. You know, council flat got broke into about three or four times. Yeah. It was been a rough, really rough place. I just thought, it needs to sort yourself out of you. They offered me an extra £10 a week, dole, to do a forklift truck driving course. And I thought, I'll have a bit of that. You know, I've got nothing else. So I went and did that. Then I got a job as forklift truck driver. 4 days on, 4 days off, 12-hour shifts. So 6 in the morning, so 6 at night, 4 days, 4 days off, then nights or whatever it worked out. It was all right. You know, it got me sorted, because it was like, sometimes it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. So you weren't drinking beer, do you know what I mean? Then 4 days off, then I went to the gym and I got a proper personal trainer. Worked with only the local like sports gym, council gym, whatever it was, but got a personal trainer. There happened to be an ex-marine. And I just said, mate, I want to join the army, that's my thing, I need to sort myself out. He said, right, come and see me on your 4 days off. So he got me to where I needed to be. So at 21, so 5 years of like, you know, living this existence, I won't say it was a life, really, just trying to survive.
Trying to make it work.
Yeah, and I just thought, join the army, that's going to sort me out, you know what I mean? So it's been 5 years of hard graft to get there, and then I managed to...
The thing is, it probably made you grow up a little bit as well.
Yeah, I was going the other direction a little bit, you know, I'm meeting some other people, bad guys, and mm-hmm. getting into a bit of things that I shouldn't have been getting into. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm just so glad that I just kept that focus. I think meeting that guy in the local gym, that Royal Marine, he was like, right, you need to stop doing that. He said, no, work your 4 days. If your 4 days off fall on the weekend, do overtime. Yeah. You for real, mate? You know what I mean? But 8 days on, 8 days on nights. I'm like, but to be honest, it's what I needed. I needed that advice. I needed to know someone who had been there and done it. And I think he'd done his 22, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So he knew what you could achieve and what the army could give you as a person. So it was great to meet him, actually. Yeah. And I'm glad, because I did join, and as you know, you're on exercise and it's raining and you're getting soaking wet. Yeah. And lads are like, this is absolutely crap. Why are we doing this? And I'm thinking, could be worse, mate. Could be driving for the truck in Aerdock, £140 a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the grass isn't greener on the other side.
No.
And I knew that as soon as I joined. Well, the guys who joined at 16, mm-hmm. they've got no concept of what Civvy
Street
is.
Straight off the mum's tit.
Yeah, they think they live in the dream, don't they? Yeah. In Civvy Street, and all the mates are living the dream. But reality is, it's hard grass.
Yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. there's plenty of ways you can go down other avenues, isn't there? A lot easier, do you know what I mean? So I got in. Joined the QLR, went to Glen Course, Pennycook camp, mm-hmm. I think it was. Mm-hmm. Did my basic training there, 11 weeks basic training, yeah. Got back squatted, having a bad attitude. I don't think I did have a bad attitude. I was a bit more mature, so I was like 21. And they said, right, put your kit in that dryer, in that drying room, after doing a CFT or whatever mm-hmm. it was. Mm-hmm. Get your kit in there, fellas, in that drying room. It'd be right. And I'm like, well, that drying room doesn't work. And they're like, have you got an attitude? I'm like, no,
it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. So I got put back for 3 weeks for my attitude. But then, you know, knocked it down, realised then, actually, I just shut up, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Do what you're told to do. The army was a lot different once in 97, 98, a little bit different back then. So just thought, shut up, knuckle down, do what they tell you to do, crack on with it.
Yeah.
So then went to Catterick, did all what we do there, the infantry training. Mm-hmm. And loved it, loved the banter, the lads, loved having a crack, loved doing the fizz and all that. Passed out of training. And then went and joined the QLR over in Omagh mm-hmm. at the time.
Recognise anyone from home or?
One guy in battalion. So the first day I got to battalion over in Omagh, mm-hmm. Company Smoker that first night, Company Social that first night we got there. I thought, well, I didn't know what this is about. Me and my mate turned up. It was quite, because you stay together on a QLR.
Yeah, yeah.
So we stuck together, me and my mate Willie Wilcock, out now. Nicky Butt, that weren't his real name, but he looked like him apparently.
I'm
not a football fan, so I wouldn't know, but yes. A couple of us stuck together, yeah. And I remember going to the Company Smoker and sat there, and this guy comes over. He's obviously all in civvy, so you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, lads. I'm like, oh, yeah, aye, sir. I'm not an officer. All right, okay. Well, I don't know who you are because you're in civvies.
Yeah, yeah.
And he went, good night on Friday. This was like Monday. I went, I went for a few drinks just to celebrate passing and mm-hmm. coming to battalion. So yeah, nice kebab. I'm like, I think so, yeah. I told you it weren't sunny in Ireland. I was like, this is coming back to me now. And I met this guy and I'd gone into the kebab house on a Friday night after celebrating being out with the lads. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sunny Ireland on Monday. And I remember some woman going, yeah, it's not sunny. I'm like, what do you know about it? You're not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just said, right, pint of lager, glass of wine for wife. We'll say no more about it.
And he went in the kebab shop. Was he in the end?
He was a full screw robot. Yeah. Still a really good mate to him now.
Yeah.
From St. Helens. He's out now, did his 24 years, yeah. Dad's a Chelsea pensioner.
Yeah, wow.
I keep telling him, forget in. So, mate, get in. You're 55, mate, they'll have you early. Go and be a Chelsea pensioner.
Fucking
but,
right.
That happened and he just forgot about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we become good mates. Like, but first day at battalion.
You've gobbed off at full screw's wife.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's not great. But I loved it, got into it, got on patrol over during the island back in the day. It had calmed down a little bit, hadn't it, from the 80s and stuff like that. Get the old Wessex helicopter, passing notes from saying Puma pilots are better than Wessex pilots. And sat throwing it around in the helicopter as you do. And then went shopping one day in the local town.
Mm-hmm.
We were on a 2-year residential posting there, so we were allowed out for beers and stuff like that till 1 a.m. and whatever. Went for a few bits of shopping one afternoon. Been down there for about an hour or so. Started walking back to camp. About 40 minutes later, massive explosion went off. Obviously, the Ormond bomb went off.
Yeah, yeah.
It killed 29 people
yeah.
in the town centre. So, ran back to camp, got told to put his uniform on.
Yeah.
We were on shadow guard, I think. So, then got told to report down to the gymnasium where they were bringing the casualties in to be identified by their families fucking and relatives hell. And stuff like that. So, yeah, pretty straight into 18 months in the armed forces, straight into what can happen.
Yeah.
Enjoying your time in the army. But for me, I kind of thought, well, this is going to happen. This is the yeah. this is the job I've entered into. It took me 5 years to achieve this goal and get into the army. So I'm just going to stick it behind me, you know, and just dig in and crack on and try and get myself promoted. Mm-hmm. You know, being 21, there was already people 19, 20 shouting at me, telling me to pick fag ends up. And I thought, this is not for me. This is not going to last very long. So I thought I need to get myself promoted. So I just thought, Just start doing what you're told, start looking at people, see what they're doing, the other Lance Jacks and that, copying them, you know, getting up there and trying to get myself in that promotional course. And good crack, yeah. And towards the end of that tour, 1999, Red BROs one day, and said wanted on there, wanted 15 volunteers, go and climb Kilimanjaro. So I'm reading this in total disbelief, to be honest, really thinking, you know, 18 months ago, I'm drowning for the fucking air dock.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting a chance to climb the third highest mountain in the world. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm getting paid for it.
I'm getting paid. Get paid more.
Yeah.
Get paid extra expenses, right?
Yeah, yeah.
While you're there. So I thought, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. Yeah. So we went on some pre-training, as you do, which involved us going over to Stranraer.
Yeah. Pub crawl.
Well, that's what happened because back then, like, you know, no mobile phones back then. So we got over to there. A guy called Jimmy Hardman. He was a... Well, Lance Jack, and he got bussed, so he was like the senior private. So he took charge of me and the other private soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to Stranraer. There's like a B&B straight across the road. We got in there. Guys were supposed to come up from Preston to meet us. They're going to go to the lakes and do some
hill walking
or whatever. Waited about 3 hours. They didn't turn up. So Jimmy went, right, let's check in here. We'll go to Stranraer, we'll get on the beer.
Yeah.
So that's what we did, we got on the beer.
That was pre-training.
Yeah, that was pretty much. Then the next day, you got the minibus to Ambleside.
Yeah.
Checked into a campsite there. Jimmy weren't allowed to come out with us because of a misdemeanor, what had happened the night before. he weren't allowed out. Went to Bowness, another nightclub in Bowness, where the big wheel is.
Yeah.
Residents only, apparently, for the Lake District. Told him one of our guys is AWOL, so obviously we know he drinks in here, so we're looking for him. Let us in. Happy days, party on in there. and then obviously we had the duty driver, so obviously he weren't drinking. But then on the way back to the campsite, January time, messing about a little bit, maybe some of the guys crashed the minibus, didn't we?
Fuck's sake.
Ended up on the side, this minibus. So we all piles out of this minibus, gets it back on its wheels, jump back in. Someone said they could smell petrol. So we all debussed again.
Yeah.
Then next day, went back to Ireland. That was our pre-training climbing the third highest mountain in the world. but they're the great things what you remember, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, it was a good crack, yeah. Then we moved back to the UK, back to Catterick. Did, of course, get promoted, Lance Corporal. Passed that, went to Canada on an exercise Iron Anvil.
Yep.
Big, massive med man exercise. I then seen the Warrior. Armoured vehicle for the first time over there. We were like Royal Infantry,
right?
Tabbing about.
So you just look at them
the
like
trench,
fucking
going, look at that, mate. That looks a mega.
Yeah.
Them guys in the back of there just flying around, jumping out.
That.
We got a BV apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't know what BV was.
It sounded good though.
Yeah, that was amazing. So come back to the UK after that. Red BROs again, as you do every day.
Yep.
Of course, we all read it every day. said on there, wanted Lance Corporal Warrior Commander. Duke of Wellington's regiment in Osnabrück in Germany.
Yeah.
So I went and seen Company 2IC, and he said, yeah, if you go for that, you get promoted on posting.
Brilliant.
You'll be there straight away. And I thought, Deutschmark in Germany, tax-free. I'm not joining the army station in Catterick.
Yeah.
You know, now from where I live, I've joined to see some new things. So went over there on a two-year posting.
How'd you find Germany? Did you enjoy it?
It's good Germany. I like Germany, yeah. Being attached to the Yorkshire regiment, when you're from Lancashire, weren't the best at the time, straight away, you know what I mean? shark bite there.
He
became a good friend of mine.
War of the Roses.
Yeah, but no, we're all from up north, aren't we?
Yeah.
And we're all trying to do the same job, so we get on with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I ended up on a two-year posting and spending 5 years with the Dukes in Germany, did Warrior DMI course,
right.
Bulldog DMI, did juniors, so did skill at arms, but then fell off the Bedford You know, after a after a Pascal at Arms, because I was already a full screw, so I wasn't too concerned about that. But then I went back. I did it again. I did it at 33. So
fucking hell.
Bit of a lick up doing juniors at 33. Yeah. There was guys in my section 21 smashing it. So, but I got through it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then I was double at it then, like Royal Infantry, Armoured Infantry.
Yeah.
So it was happy days, and ended up doing 5 years in Germany with the Dukes. So I just transferred. I just thought, if I go back to QLR now, you know, I wouldn't really know anybody.
Yeah.
Any of the officers, any of the senior
lads would be like, who's this cunt? Just
who's this guy who's rocked up now as a full screw? We don't know who he is. So I just thought, stay with the Dukes, you know, at the end of the day.
100%.
It's happy days. And then I went to Kosovo 2001 with the Dukes, 2003 into Iraq, 4 days' notice.
Yep.
To go. We went, we were supposed to be going. But I was in the UK, actually. I think I was supposed to go to Canada doing range safety. And then I got this phone call saying, get back to Germany. You're going to Iraq in 3 days. For happy days.
For fuck's sake.
So we went over there. As you know, back then, green kit.
Yeah.
You know, in the desert. Again, light wall. So on the back of Bedfords, sitting on ammunition boxes and water. It weren't the best. But I've got fond memories of being there, to be honest. You know, I think what people don't see on the news, what we do. You know, the hearts and minds, giving the locals water, giving them medicine and all that. Yeah, that's not on the news. It doesn't sell newspapers, and no one's really interested in that. But for me, that's the most important thing. What we do, and makes us realise why we do what we do. You know, so a bit of time at Unkazar, as a buyer.
Yeah,
just about as far as we went up on that first tour. I remember. I don't think. I'll keep calling him Sharkbite. I don't think it was. I think it was Sharkbite, right?
Yeah,
he'd been out on some vehicle, a Lanny. We had stripped down Land Rovers.
Yeah.
And then he got a puncher. So he comes back in, changes the tyre, whites on the jack, tightens the wheels up, then just lowers it. Happy days, right? Next patrol, I goes out in this Land Rover, doing about 60 Ks. Down there, one of the main highways or whatever.
Yeah.
Front wheel comes off.
This Land Rover. He's going.
Honestly, it's like he couldn't. It's like what you see in films. It's like front wheel flying down the road. Land Rover on three wheels. I was like the commander and the driver. I had no one else in my seat. Managed to get it stopped at the side of the road. Yeah. Oh, it was a funny times.
I'm gonna write that down when I speak to
him. Yeah, yeah. Also, It is what it is, isn't it? But we were over there, seen some local driving a Ford Mustang. I'm like, it's 2003.
Yeah.
I'm in Iraq. We're at war. I'm driving that Ford Mustang.
Yeah.
I'm having a go at that. You know what I mean? I thought, I can't not. I missed that opportunity. So pulls him over and did a quick boot and bonnet on his car. And he could see how enthusiastic we were, seeing this car. I just said, mate, any chance?
That was 100% stolen, though.
Can I have a go? Yeah, yeah. So it went probably over. Is, yeah. So he gave me a go, yeah. So I had a little blast up and down the strip, seeing Commander going mental, trying to get out of this car. But again, you know, good times. Commander's gone on to do amazing things now, and apparently he's got a picture of me in this Mustang on his desk.
That's
right.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but again, no, these are the things what you remember, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
I know bad things happen, don't we, when we're on operations and things like that.
Yeah,
but for me. The good times far outweigh them sometimes. Yeah. And I think it's about focusing on the good times and
definitely.
That gets you on the front foot, doesn't it? Going forward again. So Iraq again, 2005. Peacekeeping tour, a bit different than being there in 2003.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot different. We were warrior. So we were out on the ground in the vehicles. At Basra, Shatal Arab,
yeah.
Yeah, so we were up there. But I don't know, we were a lucky battalion, you know. We had no casualties in 2003, 2005, we had no casualties on a winter tour. So, as we know, things calmed down, don't they? 2005, I don't think the IED threat had quite kicked off in Iraq in 2005.
No.
I think the next tour, I think they got absolutely smashed.
Yeah.
I think we were getting a couple of Chinese rockets coming into the base, but we were pretty much left alone, really. So, again, you know, I think that. When we went to Afghan later on, it was a massive shock to the battalion because they took a lot of casualties. We lost a lot of guys, and I think they've been blinking a bit as a battalion because we're not saying we weren't educated into what could happen, but nothing could really happen on them tours that we'd been on. So we weren't prepared for that kind
the
of
shitstorm that
sacrifice
was after.
To be made in Afghan kind of thing, yeah. So, we moved back to the UK then, down to Warminster.
Yeah.
Took over from one of the Scottish regiments. It was apparently a nightmare down there because obviously 7 hours
not
from
home. Not them. Having it.
Yeah. So they just stay there for weekends, don't they?
Yeah.
But our guys, been in Germany for 5 years, weekends, they wanted to get back to Yorkshire. You know, and I wanted to get back to Lancashire and watch the Mighty Saints play rugby and all that. So I had some good times there. We were demo battalion.
Yeah.
I also went and did...
getting beasted on demos.
Yeah, oh God, it was horrendous, wasn't it, the demo battalion? Yeah. You know, just, you want to be on tour yourself. Why aren't you picking us to go? Yeah. You know, but all the units coming through, they're going away on tour, and we're stuck in the UK, skint and, you know, working all week in the field and getting home on the weekend knackered and all that. It's like, just, I'd rather be on tour, to be honest. You know, I'm not a soldier who, like, walking around camp marching.
No. I'd always get in trouble. I definitely wasn't an in-camp soldier, that's for sure.
No, I wasn't really up for that kind of thing, we were down there. I got the chance to go to walk through the Grand Canyon.
That's cool.
So I read the notice board again.
Yeah.
Arrow, whatever it is, on the wanted again, some volunteers go and walk through the Grand Canyon. A week in Vegas.
That's quality.
4 days walk through the Grand Canyon. Yeah. Another week in Vegas. Like,
get paid to do it.
Taxpayers, thank you very much. So I've had some great opportunities. Yeah. You know, on Medman that I was on one time, I got the chance to go and drive from Medicine Hat to a place called Dawson City.
Wow.
It's about 5,000 kilometres
Canada.
Canada.
Yeah.
So three pickup trucks, four guys in each pickup truck, drove up there, spent about a week with some Canadian Rangers, the old 303 rifles, doing all that kind of stuff. Drove down the Mackenzie River, what the ice road truckers go down, and then we drove back to Med Hat.
That's amazing.
You know, so I've done some amazing things during my time in the army. That's what I look back on and think, you know, I'd never have done them things if I'd not joined the army. Obviously, these injuries wouldn't have happened, but then I wouldn't be the man I am today either. So it springs around about to me and think, as I mentioned before, some guys join at a young age and get sent straight to Afghan and they lose some limbs and the army's maybe not give them what they expected it was going to give them. And I think that's that we need to be thinking about maybe offering them guys the adventure training now, afterwards kind of thing. But so then spent 4 years then in Warminster. And then 2009, obviously, during the summer there. Bloodiest tour, or bloodiest time in Afghan at that time.
To that date.
So I think the army come to our unit and said we need some PCRs. Battlefield casualty replacements, as we know. So our company got a few guys attached to it, as we know. I think we've just been to Kuwait. Doing some pre-training for a potential tour to Iraq.
Yeah.
Our company, so we were like the lead company then. We're the most trained up company in that kind of environment. Obviously, they're both two very different operations. So they've got 120 guys all together now in the company.
Yeah.
And they wanted some volunteers to go over there.
Yeah.
And I put my hand up straight away. I think there's one guy out of the 127 who didn't put his hand up, and he just had a baby about 3 weeks before. So, you know, I don't blame the guy for not volunteering. He went anyway. He just didn't volunteer. Yeah.
Somebody's like, you're going anyway?
Yeah, you're going anyway, mate.
You volunteer, good lad. Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone else stepped backwards.
Yeah.
He then stepped forward. Happy days. 27th of July, we flew over to Camp Bastion, did the pre-training and all the rest of it, acclimatising, learning about the Valon and the metal detector
So were you backfilling like the Welsh Guards Battalion, the Omelette teams, and everyone?
So we got split up, and they said no one will go anywhere less than section strength.
Right.
So I was section commander then.
Yeah.
So the Fusiliers, who was part of two rifles battle group, they needed a section. They lost a couple of guys.
Yeah, yeah.
They needed a section to go to them. So that's where me and my guys was going.
Yeah.
First time I'd worked with these guys. To be honest, although we're in the same company, some come from other areas, and I was more warrior then. I was a warrior, the company warrior, or platoon warrior sergeant, although I'd done juniors and all that, and obviously they needed me then to put my junior Brecon hat on and be a section commander instead. So I didn't really interact with the guys as warrior sergeant. They were doing what they were doing in the platoons.
And
when they needed the vehicles, they'd come down and all the rest of it. But, you know, I got with the guys and did that 2 week acclimatisation training there. Probably my worst time in Afghan, probably, Camp Bastion.
Sat there in Bastion.
Sat there waiting to get an helicopter.
Getting bollocked all the time.
just trying to keep ourselves entertained. Yeah. When we get into a bit of bother, trying to keep ourselves fit. But I think watching the helicopters coming in, you know,
daily,
two times a day, landing,
ambulances
racing out, guys getting offloaded to the field hospital, thinking that's where we're going.
Yeah,
very difficult as a session commander, any kind of leader really, to keep guys' morale up. Thinking, guys, we're going there, you know. But just getting my guys out every day, getting the metal detectors out, saying, guys, no, let's just concentrate.
Let's train, train, 100%
train. 100% on what we're trained to do, and that won't be us, you know, happy days. You know, none of us think we're invincible, do we? But none of us think it's going to happen to us.
Sure.
And I think that's the mindset that you need to have, don't you? So, yeah, flew out there, got attached to the fusiliers, all from down south. Obviously, those guys from Yorkshire, and then me from Lancashire, being attached to them, a bit of banter.
Yeah.
But again, you know, we're trained to do
common goal.
Do what we do, And the sergeant major come over, was really, you know, mega pleased that we were there.
Yeah.
These guys were obviously getting thrashed, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Guard duties, a section down on guard duty, section down on patrol. So they're really pleased to see us. They've been waiting for us to get out there and release some of the load off them. So we got there and got straight into it, got straight out on the ground. On patrol.
Whereabouts were you?
So we were in Fob Norway.
Right.
So forward operating base Norway. I think it was the first commando, one of the first commando bases that got established over there. I can't remember what it was called, but it was big commando signs there everywhere. It was in Sangin and in Elmend and all that. So we just integrated. I just said to the sergeant major, listen, we're a section of 8 guys and I'm in command of this section. I don't want my guys being split up.
Yeah,
between your company,
here,
there, and everywhere, my OC has said
you
will work as a body of men.
Yeah, and that's how we're staying.
Yeah, he was happy with that. Every now and again, obviously, some guys would go onto a different patrol.
If
they needed. Bolster up. Yeah, but predominantly we stayed as a section and did that and operated as a section.
Yeah,
within one of the platoons, which was happy days. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we just started getting out there on the ground. Yeah, and went on a patrol down to the green zone.
Yep.
As you know, it's probably about 6 km from our location down to the green zone. And by the time you cover that kind of distance, you know, the kit we're carrying and all the rest of it, it's like 4 or 5 hours in.
Yeah,
you get down there, you spend about an hour or two down there, then you've got to come back, haven't you? So
we
come up with a plan as a platoon to go down there, take 3 days' worth of food and water, extra ammunition, some extra supplies and all that, pay a local guy, whatever.
To live in his compound.
Take over his compound, and then patrol from there for the next 3 days.
Yeah.
So we'd done that for 3 days, and another platoon was going to come down, take over from us. We was going to go back to the main camp. Unfortunately, on the way down, one of their guys got hit by an IED, lost his arm. Guys got amongst him, as they do. Got him on the stretcher, back to the FOB, squared him away, then off he went to Camp Bastion. So then we decided... Well, not obviously not me, but the other people decided we had no more food and water left, running out of ammunition and supplies. So wait till last light and we'll go back to the main camp ourselves. Unfortunately, a young guy in my team, Fusilier Bush, come over to me and said, Andy, that guy, my best friend, you know, if you think he's going to be okay. I said, well, I've heard he's damaged his arm, mate. I don't know how severe it is. I said, but as we speak, he's on a helicopter now on the way back to Camp Bastion.
Yeah, probably the best hospital in the world at that point.
Surgeons are trying their best to save his arm. Medic's going to be all over him. You know, like you say, he's going to get first class service.
Yeah, yeah.
So first thing the next morning, mate, he'll be off back to the UK, to Selly Oaks, which is definitely, you know, the best hospital in the world 100%. At that time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He said, you know what, Andy, I think I'd rather be dead than lose any limbs. So, well, you know, mate, don't be thinking like that. No, we don't know if he's lost his arm. The surgeons will try to save it. If he does lose it, unfortunately, he'll get rehabilitated. He said, you know, 3 months, end of the tour, mate, we'll all go home.
Yeah, yeah.
You can go and see him. You'll see that he's doing okay. You can go and visit with him.
Was he a young lad?
Young lad, mate, yeah. I think 24, something like that, I think, maybe, yeah. Highly, you know, really fantastic Valen guy, really outstanding. He'd been out there for 3 months before we'd got there. Come to my team, very highly rated. I could swap one of my guys out for him to my team for that mission. I just said, you know, you need to go and sort your kit out, mate. Go and sort your kit out. I'm off now getting a brief. When I come back, I'll tell you what's going on and then we're off. So I come back and got the brief. Got the guys together, said, right, this is what's happening. front section is going to be in front of us, platoon sergeant, which is going to be us guys, another section to the rear, and then HQ, as you know, yep. all together. Got 35 blokes in the patrol, mm-hmm. heading our way back to the camp. Set off about 2200 before last light.
Yeah.
Been going for about an hour. Massive explosion, big flash of light. I had my PMVGs on, so all of a sudden then you can't see nothing.
You can
feel the ground shake, and the platoon sergeant that steps on an IED, St. Valentine, lost both his legs straight away. So yeah. I weren't aware of that at the time. I was aware what had happened instantly, as you know. Grab Bush, grab my medic, get down there, boys, start
squaring away down there.
So Bush set off with the medic down towards the platoon sergeant, towards the casualty, mm-hmm. went about 3 metres forward, another ID.
Oh, fucking hell.
Went off, lost his legs, left arm. Medic was straight on him, straight behind him. Someone come back from the front section, started treating the platoon sergeant. We then crossed the canal, cleared an area, chopper come in, got the guys out of there on the helicopter. Then turn around to the young guy behind me. Said, "Right, mate, get your Valen out.
Yeah.
You're now the guy, mate. Get it out. Let's get some fresh batteries in it."
Yeah.
Throw some ammo on the floor. Checked it was working, and we cracked on down the canal. We had a loom coming up from the main camp. You know, trying to mm-hmm. give us the best chance possible. Mm-hmm. Got in the canal. Took us probably about another 6-7 hours.
Yeah.
Get back to the fob, you know. And I'm not afraid to admit I was frightened and scared myself.
Sure.
You know,
two
guys just very seriously injured.
Had two IDs, straight away.
It is what it is, isn't it? You know. Well, we got back, walked through the camp gates. Obviously, guys on sentry. Went in, dropped his kit. Sigh of relief, but then also overwhelming feeling of anger and frustration, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Company sergeant major, then come over. Got the guys together.
Yeah.
Give us the absolutely devastating news. Sam Valentine passed away on the helicopter on the way back to Camp Bastion. Bush, he said, was in a stable condition, and next morning he'd be flown back to the UK. So guys were angry, you know. I was angry. Everyone was, but you've got to try and not show that anger to the guys. I mean, and me and the other platoon commanders got together, the other full screws in the team, and for me it was very, very difficult because we understood the loss, but it weren't one of our guys.
Sure.
So I got some of our guys together, said, "Listen, we're going to do guard. I said, "I'm going to speak to the SAT major now. We'll step up, we'll take over the central positions and let these guys come together
as a
body of men and get around each other.
Get the heads right.
Condone each other, get themselves in the right place." Yeah. It's a loss to us, you know. We've been out there for a month with the old guy. You get to know them and all the rest of it. But they've been out there 4 months.
Yeah. PDT together and everything before.
Yeah. So I thought, let them guys go and do that. We'll take over the central positions and we'll crack on with that.
Yeah.
And then the next couple of days, we kind of on patrol, got back out there. You know, I think it's sure the Taliban that we're not going to hide away from them.
No.
We're going to do a job. That's what we need to do.
Yeah.
So the locals, we're here to look after them, and we need to crack on doing that.
They need to see it as well.
And show the guys that the kit works.
Yeah.
You know, it does work. It does do its job.
Instill confidence in them again.
Yeah, these things happen, don't they?
Yeah, man.
It can happen to Andy McNabb. It can happen to a day one recruit on his first day of his tour. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen, isn't it? So we went back out and got back on the ground. And I think about three days later, the company site major got us together again, come over and said, unfortunately, Private Bush passed away in Selly Oaks in Birmingham. So my head completely went, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, this guy told me that he'd rather be dead than losing any limbs, you know.
Yeah.
Questioning myself, questioning my leadership, you know. Why didn't I send myself forward? Why didn't I send somebody else after what he told me? You know, and I was struggling. You know, I was really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You question yourself, don't you, as a leader? Why did you make that choice? So I went and spoke to Padre. I just thought, Padre's here.
Yep.
You know, he's a wealth of knowledge.
Yep.
The Padre is the best man to speak to in these situations.
Yeah.
You know, I weren't looking, and I weren't sure 100%. if the other guys from their regiment was like looking in, you know, they'd lost one of their guys, and I'd kind of made that happen in a way. I looked at myself and I was thinking they're questioning my ability as a commander, leader, and all the rest. Not just my guys, but the ops guys as well, the fusiliers and the rest of it. But I went and spoke to Padre, and he had some very wise words, as they do, as well as a pocket full of sweets, which always helps, doesn't it? He said, Cole Reed, Private Bush, highly trained as a valor man. That's his job.
Yeah.
Medic's job to save life. Medics can't go walking around by themselves. So in that split 3 seconds that you made that decision, he believed I made the correct decision at the time. He made me believe I made the correct decision at that time as well. And he also said, you need to put this to bed, and we'll have a chat about it now, but you've got another 2 months left on tour, and you can't be out on the ground dwelling on this.
Yeah, or blaming yourself.
It's happened, yeah. Hasn't it? And you've got some more men to lead, and there's still a job to be done. So, it's something that I do still think about, but since then I have spoken to usually Bush's parents in the past, and they don't hold any resentment towards me. They know that he loved his job, he loved what he did, he loved being out there with the boys. And that was a big relief for me, and I would recommend other guys to try and do that if possible, because speaking to the family members it's difficult, don't get me wrong, very, very difficult conversation to have, but it gives you closure on that, I think.
Yeah, I think
that's important.
There's a very good friend of mine. There's three of us who are very good friends. One of them died, and neither of us, admittedly, maybe cowardice has got something to do with it, but I haven't spoken to his parents since it happened.
I think they'd be dying soon. I think they'd love to hear from you. Because love to hear what happened and what was he up to the last couple of days beforehand. How was his morale? What was his feelings like? Yeah. Did he mention us or whatever? Do you know what I mean?
I suppose it's closure for them as well in a way.
Yeah, yeah. It was just difficult. And I know no one in that regiment. It's a job, isn't it? And they know we were there. We do what we do. But it was added the extra element, I think, of difficulties to it being these seven guys who just come along, what I mean? And they've lost one of their own, but difficult. But speaking about it, that's the thing, isn't it?
Sure.
And as you said before, I do the speaking nowadays, the motivational speaking, and every time I do it, I speak about that.
Yeah.
Maybe don't go to as much depth as that, but speak about it, and for me, that's my therapy.
Yeah.
I'm not sat at home dwelling about what's happening.
Sure.
I think by speaking about it, offloading it out of my mind, 100% helps me.
Yeah,
helps me move forward. Yeah,
100%.
So then we cracked on with the tour and got more towards the end of the tour. 10 days to go. So the 13th of October.
Yeah.
2009. I think it was the Rifles, one of the Rifles regiments. There's about 25 of them now, isn't there, or something?
Like, about that,
loads of them in there. I can't remember which one it was, to be honest. But they come out and I got tasked to take them on a fan patrol, to show them what were, show them what elders and where to go and whatnot. Show them what not to do, which is a bit... No, I ended up giving them a full demonstration on what not to do. But, I had a few of them attached to me. So they were probably in sections of about 15.
Yeah.
Their officers, their full screws were with us. Our guys were there, they were just in light order, to be honest, just to acclimatise and get out there.
Yeah.
And it was just a task to go and search some compounds for some weapons or whatever. I was the lead section.
Yeah.
Two sections in reserve. Jamie was my front guy with his Velen, cracking lad. He was in my regiment. We're back now.
Yeah.
As a section. Funny enough, we come out as BCRs to help them out, and then they sent some of their guys home on the advance party, and we're like, hang on a minute, we're here to help you, now we're last ones to leave. Hey, that's what it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. They'd done 6 months, hadn't they? We'd done 3 months, they had a lot of going on, happy days, So we went on patrol about 4:30 in the morning, October, as we know, probably 17, 18 degrees, mm-hmm. opposed to 27 in the middle of summer.
Feel cold.
Yeah, a bit cooler now. Yeah, softies on and all that. We've just been going along for maybe about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Jamie stopped. Said, Andy, some bad wire here, pal. He said, we're going to go on a different way, mate, or a different path. So I said, right, don't worry, Jamie, take a knee. The rest of the guys get down, get some water on board.
Yeah.
As they do, got on the radio, told them what was going on.
Yeah.
One of the guys moved into an overwatch position over there with his section.
Yeah.
Got the map out, had a look, looked at my watch. It was about 5 to 5 in the morning. I just looked at my watch then with my left hand, but my watch was actually on my right hand. Yeah. And it still works. I've still got it. Yeah,
never.
Still works. Yeah, the old G10 for men. Yeah, it's still going. So yeah, I looked across the right hand side, and there's these three tracks leading down towards the village. So
yeah.
Two had no markings on whatsoever. The third track has some footprints on it,
yeah.
Some cattle markings and some motorbike tracks. So 5 to 5, you know, we know, don't they? They go to prayers at 5 in the morning. So 10 to 5, 4 to 5, people generally start walking about. Yeah, yeah. October, gets windy, tracks get blown over, you know. And you look back on your Northern Ireland days and think, is this a come on? There's, you know, has someone ridden down there or walked down there? Mm-hmm. Are they setting us up here? But at that time, you're just like, well, to me, them two tracks have not been used. Do I want to risk that?
Yeah.
That one looks, so good. It has been moved.
Yeah.
People were milling about a little bit. There's some guy was herding some goats about. We passed him on the way up there. So I just made the decision to just go down that trap there. You know, I thought it had been well used that morning. So I said to Jamie, right, mate, let's go. Get yourself down there, pal. So Jamie stood up, got his kit on, got his metal detector, his Vallum.
Mm-hmm.
Started setting off, turned around, told the rest of the guys, get the kit on board, follow me. Went about 3 or 4 metres forward and then stepped on the ID device. So next thing I was aware of, just lay on the floor on my back.
Yeah.
Dust cloud around me. Mouth was just full of dust.
Full of dust.
Couldn't, felt like a stunned numbness from my body. You know, I weren't in pain.
Mm-hmm.
I weren't like screaming out in pain. I didn't really feel any pain. Just I knew something violent had happened to me. You know, you're like a big prop forward run into you, or you bang your funny bone, you're like, it feels like a bit weird. Looked down, I couldn't see my legs at that stage. Looked across to this left hand, and that finger was hanging off, so I made a fist, kept it over that. And I was just thinking self-help straight away, you know. And I think people think it's quite bizarre, but that just kicks in straight
muscle
away.
Muscle memory.
See, that training just kicks straight in there. I knew I had my morphine and tourniquets down there in my right-hand pouch. Looked across to this right arm, and it was just twisted behind my back. So I knew I couldn't help myself at that stage. I think for me, quite lucky. I didn't see any claret anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is quite lucky. I'm quite an. I'll only pass out if I see. Yeah. I had a TB injection at school and passed out. You know what I mean? So I'm quite glad that I didn't see anything clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
But Jamie come back towards me. He got blown forward in the blast. Took some shrapnel to his back. One of the other guys come back from the rear of the section. I see him speaking to me, but I didn't have a clue what he was. I couldn't hear what he was saying.
Yeah.
I see his mouth moving. Jamie was doing, give me the morphine, started putting tourniquets on me, and I knew the guys were there. Then, you know, I knew the guys would do the job that they're trained to do.
Yeah,
so I just shut my eyes and went in and out of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
They decided then that we were about 3 clicks away from camp. We'd obviously just walked down the main strip,
yeah.
So that was clear. So QRF just flew out from camp. In the old Jackal or wherever they were in.
Yeah.
Got me on a stretcher, back to the fob. Jamie got put on the vehicle as well.
Yeah.
Straight to the medical centre, or tent.
Yeah.
That's what it is, 12 by 12 or whatever it was. But, you know, hey, amazing, even out there on the front line, we've got amazing facilities.
Yeah,
the doctors there.
And the medics are
doing his job.
All over it.
So they're straight on to me, whatever they were doing, IVs, I imagine, all that. But like I say, you know, looking back, a full demonstration on what not to do for the rifles guys on their tour. But I've spoken to them since, you know, it was a wake-up call for them.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking would be, first patrol.
Yeah, first patrol, this is what can go on, boys, you know. And how vulnerable you are, like I said before, how, you know, Andy McNabb and his mates or Fur Patrol you've been on. It can happen, can't it?
IDs don't discriminate. Don't care who you are.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are, does it? No, or what you're doing, what kit you're carrying or, or whatever. And they adapt their skills as we adapt our skills to overcome them, don't they? Yeah, so graphite and all the rest of it, you know. But yeah, they got me back then to back to Cambastian on the helicopter.
Yeah.
From there, the doctors tidied me all up and apparently my leg was still on.
All right.
At that stage, yeah. I looked down and just assumed they'd come off, but apparently they just that badly shattered. They just like folded over.
Yeah, yeah.
They showed me an X-ray probably about a year later, to be honest, but before I realised this, I didn't know. They showed me an X-ray of my hand where they put some metal plates in it and the doctor pressed space one more time than he should have done. And then I see the next X-ray of my full body with my limbs still on.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was like 2 years later.
Yeah. Hang on a minute.
Yeah, I'm like, hang on, he's cut my legs off. Honestly, that's what my initial action. I got quite angry.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was happy that they'd come off at the point of impact. I thought that's what it is. Then all of a sudden I'm thinking, right, you chopped my legs off.
Yeah.
You decided where to take them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a bit angry about that, but then I suppose, you know, he quickly pressed space again and went to the next slide. I don't know, I just always assumed they'd come off at the point of impact.
They're just too poorly damaged to save.
They're shattered to pieces, I think just like skin and pants were holding them on, so they took them off. And obviously the doctors are going to take them off as long as possible, aren't they? They can save your knees, they're going to save your knees.
Yeah,
they're just going to go,
just fucking lob them off.
I'm clocking off in a minute. get it lobbed off there. But So I'm one below knee on the right-hand side and above knee on the left-hand side and then above my elbow with my arm, So they flew me back to Selly Oaks, as it was then, in Birmingham. It's now the QE, isn't it?
Yeah.
Another outstanding facility that we've got.
Yeah, brilliant.
Selly Oaks outstanding as well, you know. So I spent 3 days on critical care in the induced coma that they put me in. And then I kind of come out of that. I remember waking up, taking a deep breath in, and I just smell like bleach and clean detergents and that smell of
clinical
death, clinical thing. But then I began to look around and there's like crisp white sheets on the bed. I couldn't see my legs at the end of the bed, but I remember not seeing them. So I weren't in too much shock about that, you know.
Sure.
Crisp white walls everywhere. The doctor come over and started really showing me that I was going to be okay and explained to me and the family what injuries I sustained, as I just explained there.
Yeah.
And then as I looked, I could see that my mum and dad was there. And my stepmum, that's why I was probably shouting, to be honest, you know. And then and my girlfriend was there as well, you know, and I'd only met Claire 8 months before I went to Afghan.
Yeah.
And I spent 3 months in Kuwait pre-training and then 3 months in Afghan. So
I've probably
seen her about six times on a weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're being the best version of yourself you can possibly be. So she obviously didn't really know who I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, no, because you drive home on a Friday, don't you?
Yeah.
Take them out for a meal, like a nice beer, sat there, another nice meal, being all prim and proper,
and not swearing
and fine or whatever. Yeah. And then you're back in the car on a Sunday, back down to camp, aren't you? Where
and you'd be yourself again.
Be with the boys again, yeah. So she's seen the best version of me for like six or seven times. But, you know, I did turn to Claire and say, if you want to walk away, then walk away, because you're 27 years old. You know, this is going to be a massive impact on your life as it is mine. And very luckily for me, you know, and it shows what kind of person Claire is. You know, she said, you're the same person who I fell in love with and I'm going to get through this journey
together. She's an amazing person.
Together, yeah. So obviously, fantastic person. I think that's probably also give me that extra that maybe some of the guys had to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had someone who was there to support me through thick and thin. And for someone to go from being your girlfriend to your carer is a big ask, isn't it?
Massive.
For these people, but you can't ask your mum to do things for you, can you, all the time? No. So the guys struggled, don't they? So having that person, it's still difficult asking your girlfriend to do some of these things that they've got
of course
to
it is,
step up and do, but it is a benefit having a partner. And I think if you look at some of the guys who have gone on to do things a bit more quickly than others, maybe, they've had partners.
They've
had children, and I think that is fundamental. Getting a life partner is a fundamental thing to moving forward.
It's probably another reason why some young lads in the military rush and get married pretty fucking early on.
Yeah, well, they can't see the girlfriend on the weekend because they're on guard duty, aren't they, whatever, so they go, well, let's just get married.
Yeah.
I'll still on guard duty, but I'll be home that evening. And that's why some of these relationships don't work out, is it?
Because they
rush into it too soon, they don't actually know the person.
Yeah.
You know, so it does change quite a lot, doesn't it? Yeah,
massively.
But then, then I moved up to the main ward, and I had been writing to Carl, my cousin, And I said, Carl, I met this girl, you know, she's amazing. You know, I'm 33 now, I want to settle down with this girl. So I said, when I come back from Afghan, mate, you know, I'm going to ask her to marry me. So I just started to set myself on goals straight away. So I set myself, that was like a long-term goal that I set myself. And then one of the guys come to see me from our regiment and said, Duke Wellington's coming to camp on July 2010. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to get the medal that day. It's going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. All the mums and dads and wives and girlfriends are going to be there. And the regiment's going back to Afghan in October 2010. Mm-hmm. And I just lay there and thought, you know, if I can stand on the day in my wheelchair, possibly march off the parade ground and get my medal, then all the mums and dads and the wives and girlfriends will know if their son, daughter, husband, wife gets injured, you know, with hard work and determination, they can push on.
Yeah, yeah.
So 100%. I just kind of set that as a middle-term goal.
Yeah, yeah.
That I set myself. I just thought, I need to do that. I need to show the guys. And I think we'd lost four guys, I think, from the battalion at that stage as well. Yeah. I think I just need to show them that if you do come back with these injuries, I was the only guy injured from the regiment on that initial tour. I think I still possibly am from our battalion, not the regiment as a wider whole, has lost been on it. But I just thought I've got this duty now. I've been given this thing that you've got to show them what can be done beyond injury, just in case it happens to one of their loved ones. So I set that as the middle-term goal.
That's brilliant.
But then straight away, I just wanted to go on. You know, go on for a weekend, spend some time with the missus, getting to know each other again. I didn't even know what her favourite colour was at that stage or nothing, because you're just writing crap, aren't you? Letters home. I think I knew her favourite film was Shawshank Redemption. And that was, that's why I bring that up all the time, every conversation we have. And what about Shawshank? I'm like, I need to know some other stuff about this about this girl, you know what I mean? So I set myself an immediate goal, going on for a weekend, and the doctor said, well, if you can get off your wheelchair, or your bed onto your wheelchair, off your wheelchair onto the floor in case you fall out of it, mm-hmm. and back in your wheelchair again. He said, we'll let you go on for the weekend. So I said, I'm going on Friday. I said, right, Friday, I'm going home.
Yeah, yeah.
But then this was I think the Sunday before that, I think, or whatever.
Fucking hell.
So I'm just taking off the bed onto the wheelchair and doing that, sitting there for a couple of hours in the wheelchair, trying climbing back on the bed again, doing that a few times. And while I was doing that, you know, honestly, I was listening to the guys talking, telling the friends and family what had happened. And, you know, a lot of the guys who, I'm not going to mention names, but we're all smashing it now, to be honest, them guys who I was on that ward with, ward 512, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The most inspirational place I've ever been in my life, you know, and the nurses there, NHS and military nurses, you know, absolutely amazing, because military nurses before Afghan and Iraq are doing hearing tests and taking some blood tests and all the rest of it. Then next thing, they're treating a guy who's lost like three limbs.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden now that they've stopped doing that and they've gone back to doing hearing tests and blood tests again. That's massive.
Huge.
Massive thing for them. And I think, I don't know if that's being picked up anywhere, of these nurses who were there at the time, you know, treating those guys, if they're getting looked after now or not. But, you know, the guys were talking and they're telling the family and friends what happened to them. And a lot of them were blaming somebody else. They were blaming the government, blaming the Taliban, blaming the army for the situation that they was in. And
they sounded quite bitter, were they?
Yeah, bitter and angry about it. You know what I mean? And the family were getting bitter and angry about it then as well. And I lay there and I thought, ultimately, I've joined the army. You know, it took me 5 years to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been Ireland, I've been Iraq, and I've been these other places before, and I knew what I was getting into, and I thought
the risk is there.
The risk there, isn't it? Yeah, and I thought by accepting that responsibility for my own actions, I can push on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I thought there's no point blaming Jamie.
No,
you know that's not going to help me with my life forward.
Yeah, yeah.
That's gonna make me bitter and angry.
Yeah.
And twisted, and Jamie probably feels bad enough as it is. You know, I know he does. You know, he struggles a lot. So I thought by me then blaming him, that's not going to help him.
Of course, mate.
At all. So I just thought, by accepting responsibility for my own actions, I've been able to move on a lot easier. And I think
100%.
That is the thing about the experiences that I've had in the military, of all that adventure training that I've done. I've looked back and thought, what an amazing time.
Yeah.
This has made me this person I am. It's made me the person that is going to overcome this and move on. And I thought, if this happened to you in a car accident, or a banker walking to work in 7-Eleven in London happened, you probably wouldn't have the depth of courage and the
determination,
the right word, to move on with it. But I think the army give me this is that's instilled this into me.
Yeah.
So by them giving them tools, then I can push on. So Yeah, over the next couple of days, I got off the bed onto the wheelchair, onto the floor, climbed back in the wheelchair again, and all the rest of it. So I spent like 10 days in hospital before I went on. But I think, like I explained like earlier in my early life, like breaking your leg in three places when you're five, you know, I've always had adversity in my life, you know, dyslexia, school, you know, being called names and having to work hard to achieve the goal of joining the army. I've always been goal setting, I've always had to work hard to get to where I need to be in life. My mum, I've not mentioned earlier, you know, she got a leg crushed in an accident. She had a leg amputated when I was 11.
Yeah.
So I've grown up with mum being an amputee.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm supposed to be this big tough soldier, you know what I mean? And so I think
if your mum can do it, you can do it.
Yeah, I've always been on the back foot. I've always had to work hard to get to where I need to be. And I thought it's just another one of the things that I've got to overcome. Mm-hmm. So quite a funny story. When I was in the hospital bed, there's a guy across from me, James, Scouse lad, big metal cage on his arm, right, big black eye.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Gell, what's happened to you there, lad?" He said, "Oh, I got shot by a sniper." I think, "Gell." I said, "How come you got a black eye then?" He said, "I don't want to talk about it, mate." I said, "Mate, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
All the boys are here. You've got a massive black eye. Come on. Yeah. What's going on there?" He went, "Oh, mate." He said, "I got shot by a sniper." He said, "I was quite angry." I was like, "Oh, I would imagine you would be pretty angry, like, yeah." So he said he's got his pistol out, right? So he started firing his pistol in the general direction of where he thought the sniper was.
Yeah.
And then when he went out of ammo, he was still quite angry. So he decided he was going to throw his pistol.
Oh, no.
The sniper, right?
I know where this is going.
He's not coming yet. So he threw his pistol as hard as he possibly could.
Lanyard.
Yeah. So he failed to realise it was attached to him by a lanyard.
A stretchy bungee cord.
And he came back and smashed him straight in the face. I was like, "Oh, mate," I'm laughing. But I think that's why that 512 in Celio, because I'm now in the QE, is very important, that we've got. Because when the chips are down and things aren't going too well, bit of banter in it.
Bit of crack.
The guys on the band, they're laughing at Joe. Yeah. We're still injured, we're still smashed up, we're still taking the mic out of each other. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It is
it's an odd sense of humour, isn't it? Like what squaddies and veterans have, it's a freaking really weird, dark sense of humour. And like the amount of times where I go up to my wife and she's like, just try and be normal, will you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I'm the person that like she has to warn people of. Yeah. Like he's not very politically correct. And he's got a weird, dark sense of humour. But when you put us all together, you know what I mean? In adversity, like on a ward, you have to have humour.
You need that, don't you? You know what I mean? And I'm not, you know, there was some people on that ward with me with some really bad injuries. And they're coming to the other side of it now. But, you know, you need that humour, don't you? Yeah, you need that bit of banter, yeah. So, from there then, down to Headley Court, like we said before, another an amazing facility. And the great thing about Headley Court is that you see other people with the same injury as you cracking on, and you think, well, actually, if he can do it, then I can do it.
Yeah.
And the stubbornness of the squaddie is, I'm not going to ask him for help, though.
Yeah.
I'll watch him and observe him and I'll see what he's doing.
It's almost a competition as well. You're like, well...
It is, and for me, no, I think I was like the fourth triple amputee, I think.
Yeah.
So they won't mind me mentioning the names, they're absolute legends.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Mark Ormrod, absolute legend. Tom Leithway, you know, legend, parachute regiment, Royal Marine. There's Andy Reid from the infantry. You know, they're the elite, aren't they, allegedly, and we're the infantry, aren't we, and that's it. So, you know, I had a bit of a punch to prove that I can do this as well.
You know,
we've got these guys here, they're both their regiments are amazing regiments, aren't they? But I wanted to prove that I can do it as well, you know, and a little bit of crack with them is, like, when I got my medal, I was in my full uniform with my boots on and everything. And I know one of them two guys might have had a pair of trainers on, and they might have had a walking stick when they got there. So for me, it was like, yes, you know what I mean? I'm the best triple amputee there is.
You know
what I mean? It sounds mental saying you want to be the best triple amputee you can be, but it's that rivalry.
Yeah, 100%.
That even though you want to work together, and I'll sit down with Mark and say, listen, Mark, I'm struggling, mate. I'll do them stairs, mate. And he'll be like, just slow down, concentrate, do this, do that. And you can, you know, so we'll ask him for advice and all that. And we can do that, but also you want to be the best.
Of course.
As well inside. Yeah. And I think that's why it's an amazing place, because... Civilians are now know you go to NHS Limb Centre, and they all sit there in the waiting room watching Homes Under the Hammer. They get the legs and then they go home.
Yeah.
You probably never meet another amputee.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't use the wealth of knowledge in that waiting room to their advantage. Mm-hmm. You just think mm-hmm. there's only me in my world now, there's only me who's mm-hmm. got these problems that, mm-hmm. that I've got. And I think that's the great thing with the veterans community, isn't it? Whether yeah. we're down at Headley Court, or they're at the new place, the DNRC in Loughborough, or yeah. they're at Sidworth, or they're at the place in Catterick, mm-hmm. Phoenix House in Catterick.
Phoenix House, yeah.
Or just at a function, just out. At the Millions Awards or at one of Staff of Soldiers, absolutely amazing charity what Emma does there, and her Christmas parties and summer parties, like bang, as soon as that day comes out, it's in the diary. It's amazing. You go into that party, Paul Roger on tap. Happy days. We all like a bit of Paul Roger, Churchill's favourite champagne. We're all having a bit of that. But at them places that we can chat, can't we, as well?
Yeah.
Get someone to one side, sure. who we know is struggling, and have a little chat, their conversation with them. But it's a place as well where you're not looked at. Mm-hmm. Someone like me walks into a boozer, people turn their heads, don't they? What, bloody hell, what's happened to that guy over there? And
that's what I found hard with Simo. So we'd go out, and he'd be used to people staring, and I'd be looking at people, and they're staring, and I'd be like, what the fuck are you staring at?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was getting fucking angry, you know? I had a few anger issues myself at the time, so I didn't help it, but, and Simon was like, it's all right, I'm used to it. Yeah. They're going to stare. I think
the same thing, yeah. But when you go to one of, Staff of Soldiers parties, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because everyone's injured.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the wives have seen it before.
Yeah, yeah.
All the kids have seen it before.
It's nothing new.
So, it's you can relax there. You can drop your guard a bit more and just enjoy yourself where... You go to a local boozer and you're just waiting for that question. And sometimes you're like, mate, listen, I'm just out for a meal with my missus.
Yeah.
You wouldn't ask that guy why he wears glasses, why he's got a bald head.
Yeah,
You look a bit different. You know what I mean?
I'm
just a bloke, mate. I'm with my wife having a meal.
Yeah.
Because it gives a minute. You need that bit of privacy. But then the flip side of that, doing what we do with speakers and the Invictus Games and all the rest of it, what the guys are doing, absolutely smashing life, you open yourself up to then... be asked questions.
Sure.
Because it's a great thing, I put on social media yesterday. I do the corporate events.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic. But I went and spoke at a special school yesterday afternoon. Kids with ADHD, autism, Down syndrome, these kind of things. And what an absolutely amazing place. What an amazing place to go to and actually feel grateful for, you've got these injuries. Life's good. Life is good. And we are.
Could be much worse.
Yeah, we are smashing life. We are living the dream now. Some of the guys, some of the opportunities that we get to do, the organisations we work with. me and my missus, 2010, went on an 84-day round-the-world cruise. I wouldn't recommend that right now, to be honest. But then, who does that? What full screw in the army?
Yeah, yeah.
Goes on an 84-day round-the-world cruise. Yeah. Just doesn't happen, does it? No. So
we just have the leave days to start with.
So for me, doors are shut.
Yeah.
But some doors are open, and you've got to embrace them doors.
Someone said earlier on, you improvise, adapt, and overcome, don't you?
Yeah.
You got to do it. Otherwise,
and that's the thing of using these things within the army. It's like you do them all professional speaking.
Yeah.
And it's just like incentive reason why, a middle, beginning, and an end.
Yeah.
It's just what we did when we was in the army, writing our lesson plans out, or doing what we're doing. And looking at it that way, and I had my own bar for a bit, for about 6 years. I had my own bar.
Yeah.
And I owned the bar. I had a bar manager, he's my 2IC, and I had staff, they were like private soldiers.
Yeah.
So when I'm writing the staff list, that's like the stag list, isn't it? Yeah. When they're on.
Yeah.
Rather than go to the QMs for ammunition and stuff like that, and clothing, go to Costco, get some more wine and beer. So for me, just relating across the skills you've got and put them into the world that you understand. And for me, we can all do that, whether you're a 100%. Private soldier or a sergeant major, but I think it's also realising where you were on that level and not trying to jump too high and see the street straight away.
Yeah.
Once the civilian employee sees what we can bring to their organisation with our values and standards and work ethic and all the rest of it, you'll soon get noticed and you'll soon 100%. Be flying up that ladder.
100%. You don't necessarily need all these Fandango qualifications on paper. It's what the experience you bring to the table as well.
Life skills and common sense can take you a very long way in life, can't it? You can get the qualifications as you go along, can't you?
Just applying yourself and being putting you in the right place.
Right place at the right time. A lot of things happen. I did a talk, for example, to Wigan Athletic because the manager at the time lived in my village. I'm not a football fan, so I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
He asked me to come and do a talk for his team. They lost three games, did the talk. They won the next four games.
invited me to Man United. I got invited to Alex Ferguson's box. Met Alex Ferguson. There was a guy in there called Jed Mason. Mm-hmm. I told him about a challenge that I was doing to do a 400-mile bike ride and a 125-mile kayak, raising money for Star for Soldiers.
Yep.
I raised him 50 grand, and then we took 90 quality. People to Lapland just before Christmas.
Quality.
He was enthusiastic, gave me his business card, come and see me on Monday, sponsored the event, and I'm now the Armed Forces Ambassador.
Brilliant.
Just for a chance meeting and,
yeah, yeah.
and just being who you are.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
say, let's have a look at your CV. Well, I've got a CV, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he realised who I am, what I can bring to his employees in recruiting from the services,
yep.
but also inspiring his workforce that he's already got to be the best version of themselves
yeah.
every day.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what these things do. These guys just need to put themselves out there.
100%.
And get to networking events and networking clubs, and they can be a bit boring, can they? And half past six in the morning eating a dry bacon.
But you don't know who you meet.
Yeah, you might meet someone, you might have a conversation
yep.
on a train. I met some guy who's the COE of Brother, the photocopying people, just on the train, just started chatting to him, booked me for a gig now.
But you got to be out, you got to get yourself out there.
You've got to
get yourself out there, 100%. So, as part of the recovery phase, how long did it take you to sort of not get back on your feet, am I going to say that? I always put my foot on it.
Yeah.
But, like, from when they said, right, if you can do X, Y, and Z, you can go home on a Friday, did you achieve that?
So I went home after 10 days.
Quality. Being fucking hell.
Straight away, yeah. Just by breaking it down, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I want to go home on a Friday. This is what you got to do, right? So today I'm just going to get off the bed onto the wheelchair, back onto the bed. I'm just going to do that for a day and a half.
Did you find that sort of perked any other lads up on the ward, because they would have seen you do this, that you probably would have spoke to them about that as well, the fact that...
Yeah, I think you say, being a bit old, a bit more mature, so guys, you know, this is what I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
Long-term, middle-term, short-term goal.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of sat there dwelling on it.
Yeah, and I let them look around and see what I'm doing, but no, everyone is 100% different, aren't they?
Of course.
And I'm very, very lucky. I've got no internal injuries at all, so what you see is what you've got. My limbs are pretty much cut off.
Yeah.
That's it, straightforward. You know, a lot of the guys have internal stuff, facial injuries, aren't they? And so it takes them. So you can't judge any one person's ability to recover quicker than somebody else, because it looks like they've got the same injuries, because inside there's different things going on. But I would like to think that the guy did look over and think, wow, you know, he's smashing it there. And once I get a bit healthy, a bit fitter, a bit better, a bit stronger,
that's what
I'm
gonna do.
Start running on that journey as well. And for me, you know, what I do nowadays, I suppose, with all the fundraising events that I do and challenges that I do, is just to show other people, other disabled people and other injured guys, what can be achieved beyond injury if you dig in. And you know, I don't wake up every morning and go, oh wow, the sun's shining, what an amazing day, and jump out of bed, you know. I'm a grumpy
person. You've got to have a coffee,
I don't want to say I'm inspirational, but I do inspire people, but I do wake up and go, oh, my back's aching. Today's going to be quite tough. But then I wake up and think, why am I doing what I'm doing? Ultimately, it's for St. Valentine and Fusilier Bush there, you know, and those guys from my unit, the Warrior Six, who passed away. You know, out of respect for them, I've got to crack on. And that's more motivation. And obviously, moving forward, my little boy, who's seven, and my little girl, Scarlett, two next week. I want to be the best dad I can be for them, and that doesn't necessarily mean I can run up and down the garden kicking a football, but I can bring other things.
Like that, you've shown them that no matter how hard things get, you can just, as long as you're moving forward, you'll move forward.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll get them start setting the goals early on. You know what I mean? And I don't like to pinch other people's things, but even saying to the boy, just get up and make your bed, mate.
Yeah,
just get up and do that. Look, I've got this photograph there in Afghan. I do a priceless placement. My bed's made.
Yeah.
Now that obviously weren't stage managed for this presentation that I do. After I was injured, it's what you do when you get up and you make your bed. And just do that.
Little victories.
You know, little things every day. Just do a little thing every day and that. And, but my kids see me for who I am. They probably don't see me injuries, do they? No. You know, like Scarlett now, it's like two.
Dad's dad.
Yeah, doesn't realise that I'm trying to balance it on my wheelchair in the morning, trying to make a bottle, unscrew the bottle, and she's grabbing the electric control on the wheelchair, trying to move it, like, smashing your knees into the cupboards and stuff like that. Like, give it a minute. Well, she doesn't realise yet.
Yeah.
I think, she's two. Maybe at three, it'll click in.
Yeah.
She'll notice something's different.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if William did.
when he got a bit older, he noticed, right, daddy's struggling to try and fasten his car seat. Trying to get them three things to connect together at the same time when they're kicking right off. And it's raining yeah. and you're late by 5 minutes. No, that day had a difficult time. But I think it clicked with him and he just sat still. Yeah, and he realised that they're very intelligent and adaptable young people, aren't they? And I think once they notice something's a bit different, then they play it
a little bit differently.
A bit, yeah, and they can help you, but they can also then run off down the hall knowing you can't chase him as well, can't you? So I did the same with my mother when my mum was 11, or when I was 11 and she lost a leg. We lived in a three-story house, and I knew if I'd annoyed mum, if I ran upstairs, she'd not run up after me.
No,
you know what I mean? But
so wait to come down in the morning,
get the CV control phone in your head like that. We don't always realise, do we, when we're young kids, what we're doing, but
Quality. So, in terms of charities, I know you're heavily involved in the ABF, and they've helped you quite a bit.
Yeah, so the ABF Solidarity Charity, they got wind in that first like week and a half or whatever it was that I wanted to go on for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Someone must have told them, and then I just started spreading the rumour around myself, just saying to the nurses, I'm going on my Friday. And they're like, well, we best get your meds together then. And they just went round. But the ABF obviously got wind of this and spoke to Claire, said, what's the house like? He says, it's a two-bed terraced house. With the steps to the front door and a bathroom's up two extra steps when you get to the top of the stairs. So they stepped in straight away and put a ramp to my front door, turned the front door around and put a bed downstairs within that 10 days. So
that's amazing.
So, amazing support, and that's what they can do straight away, these charities, can't they? And I just think, if and when you're able to and strong enough to, and if a charity has helped you out in your hour of need, then give back to that charity.
100%.
And I think, so since that day, really, or since then, I've just become a passionate ambassador for this charity.
That's really good.
And that's my goal setting now. So, I'll do like last year, I did the frontline walk, 100K hand cycle over in France in 4 days. Well, you don't get out of bed one morning and just do that. It's like it takes a lot of preparation. Just like long-term, middle-term, an immediate goal again. And so being a supporter of the charity has not helped me raise funds and give back, but also kept me on where I need to be with my fitness level and all the rest of it, and having something to focus on away from the army. So I've done all kinds of things, jumping out of airplanes for them, and I did Snowden for the Not Forgotten Association. So I'll do a bit for all the charities, but the ABF are quite close to my heart. They have given me that immediate support that I needed. And then they put a lift in my house so I could get upstairs, and then I've moved again, so they put a wet room downstairs in the bungalow where I live. So it has been that continued support. And they're not a charity where, like, oh, Andy, can you come to this event in your wheelchair and we're going to roll you out and everyone's going to feel sorry for you and then we're going to raise loads of money. Like, Andy, come start this event, bring Claire, have some champagne, have a bit of a meal, have a good time, and you're here, and mingle with the people. And I think that's the way to do it, what I mean?
Not showing you off like cattle.
It's not like show and tell at school, is it? All you bring him out, and sometimes you do that, before you were of who they are, and I'm not a fan of that, You've got to be quite picky nowadays of who you work with, because you can't be exploited by some of the charities. And as we know, some of the guys have been exploited by charities. And we're just like infantry soldiers, aren't we, a lot of us? We don't really understand how the business world works immediately.
We just do it.
Yeah, just go and do it, because we think, it's great, raising money for charity. And it's took me a long time to realise what the business world is about, and more I've done stuff with corporate events and got involved with more corporate associations and corporate businesses, I've understood a bit more of what we have got to offer to them as well. So I do a lot for them. And then I set up my own little CIC, Community Interest Company, charity, back in 2010. So when I was on that world cruise, I went to Auckland. And I was looking around, like Blackpool Tower, really, a bit more impressive a little bit, but similar views. And I look around, and there's this guy, and he's a double amputee below knee. And he had these like really Gucci S-shaped ankles. And I looked across, I said to my missus, look at that guy's ankles. So I went over, I said, excuse me, mate. I said, I'm just wondering, where you get these ankles from? And he's like, where are you from? I said, I'm from St Helens. I said, I'm from Prescott. It's about like 20 minutes away from where I live. I said, I said, what's happened here, mate? He said, I was in a car crash. Mm-hmm. He said, I was travelling around Australia in a camper van. A young girl, 160 km an hour, smashed straight into his camper van, lost both his legs. So the Australian medical people and the government looked after him, looked after all his limb care and all that. And he went back to Australia to thank the nurses for looking after him. And he had a flight in Auckland, and he was there for the day by chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And we met each other. And I said, when we get back, mate, we'll have a beer. So we come back and we had a beer. And
small world, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I said, mate, what happens to you guys? I said, because, you know, like you said about the charities, the Blesma, the British Legion, the Soldiers Charity, you know, combat stress. All these guys, us injured guys, can be doing something every single day of the week. You know, skiing somewhere, climbing mountains somewhere, at a black tie function somewhere, driving fast cars or whatever. I said, what happens with you guys? Like, civilian amputees. And he said, basically, you get your legs and you go home. And that's it.
Yeah.
I said, well, let's do something about it then. So we set up this AIM, Amputees Inspire and Motivate, started doing some talks at schools in the local community, getting some funds, and then taking amputees, civilian amputees who have diabetes and cancer, car crashes, motorbike crashes, just check them on days out.
And
things like that. You know, and he's got like 300 members now.
That's brilliant.
And he's got three different... I've stepped away a little bit now because I've become a bit busy. But now he's got like three, one in Stoke, I think, one in St Helens, one in Liverpool. We're all doing the same the same thing, supporting civilian amputees. So
that's great.
They're absolutely fantastic that we can...
Well, it's extending that community, isn't it?
Yeah. And
outside the military.
There's still people, aren't there?
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, you wake up one day and you've got cancer in your leg, you had your leg amputated. That's really no fault of your own.
No.
And unfortunately then, there's no cash payout.
Yeah.
You don't benefits.
Yeah.
That's you, you know. Yeah. At least we've had some compensation. The army look after us, we get a pension. Yeah. I think
all these charities as well.
And the charities are there as well, aren't they? Yeah. So yeah, to get involved in something like that and give a bit back to the community, I think was great as well.
That's a great idea.
My thing for me is I've just kept busy.
Yeah.
You know, I've not dwelt on it, I've not sat at home, I've not had a chance to sit down and think, wow, what woe is me, what's happened
to
me. I've just kept busy, you know, and I think having Claire there, though I'm a very proud person, behind closed doors when things get a bit difficult and I get a bit angry, I get a bit frustrated.
Yeah.
She's there for pick up the brunt of that anger, that frustration, and support me on the journey that I'm on. You know, it has been fantastic, and I think that is important.
She sounds like a very strong woman to be there from the start, especially with, you know, what you said, the fact that, you know, you did say you can walk, we've only been together, or only seen each other like fucking seven times. But yeah, she sounds amazing. And sort of the way we've been connected to this podcast is through Emma's charity, Emma Willis, Style for Soldiers. What experience have you had through Style for Soldiers?
Emma's amazing, isn't she? Yeah. You know what I mean? And I remember the very first time, like late 2009, I got October 2009, so actually it must have been early 2010, down at the TV room at Headley Court. I don't know if you know, but if whoever's got the most severe injuries gets the TV remote control down there. So it's quite cool. When I walk in, I can just turn the football off.
Yeah. Put rugby on.
So we're all just having a brew, and then all of a sudden, this lady turns up, blonde hair, with her assistant, you know, a couple of bags and things like that. And we're looking around, like, oh, who's that? Oh, God knows, you know. Then she starts getting some stuff out, and like, a bit more interest. Freebies going on here. Then Emmy just said, you know, like, gentlemen, who would like to be tailored for a free shirt?
Brilliant.
And the guy's like, really? No, what's the question? No, listen, I watched the news. I want to do something for you guys, coming back for what you've done for the country. I make shirts, and I'd like to make you all a shirt. So yeah, I went over. I think I was still in my wheelchair. That phase. And you know, you pick what cloth you want, and you pick what cuffs you want, and the collar and the colour, and all that. And for me, I probably knew that uniform was going to be taken away from me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're not going to wear that uniform no more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a massive part of who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, 15 years.
It's almost your identity.
In the army. And I thought, you know what? So I want one of these shirts made by this lady and her girls in Gloucester.
Yeah.
You know, in England, from the shop on Jerome Street, or is it Jerome or German? I never know which. I think it's German, but it's spelled with a J.
I'm so Welsh dyslexic, so it's do you know what I mean?
I'm sure it's German Street. I'll get it right for you. I'm sure it's German Street. I thought, you know, how amazing would it be to be able to put one of them shirts on?
Yeah.
And then when you're on stage and you're doing your speaking or your job interview, mm-hmm. or doing a little radio interview, or whatever you're doing, something similar to this perhaps, you've got that shirt on, you can feel proud.
Look good, feel good.
Yeah, that shirt has been made for you, isn't it? Yeah. And now you're part of a new family, because and all the other guys from Staff of Soldiers are all wearing your Emma Willis shirts. It's just special, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're a very special person, and all the team, all the girls at the factory, I was down there last week and Prince Charles made a visit.
Yeah.
And they invited me down to come and speak and had a bit of banter there with Prince Charles and that, as you do. And then I drove home and got a steak bake on my way home.
Yeah.
That's how it is. Met Prince Charles, jumped in my transit van.
Greg's.
Steak bake from Greg's. and then I was home changing wet nappies. That's life now, isn't it? But no, Emma is amazing, And the summer ball that she puts on, and the Christmas function, and the trips to the safari park
for all
the kids to go to, because Emma's realised as well it's the ripple effect, isn't it?
Sure.
So this happens to the injured guy. His wife feels the brunt and gets upset and all the rest of that frustration happening to them. So the some of all the wives can talk together. Mm-hmm. They can speak about what problems they've got being married to an injured guy.
Sort members and support each
other. All the other way around. A girl could be married to an injured girl or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
We'll get to all that, whatever it could be. But then also, for the safari park at Warburton that Emma puts on during the summer, which is amazing, is... Obviously, my little boy is the only boy in your school whose dad's got one arm. Mm-hmm. So who does he speak to about that in school? About why he wears Velcro shoes when he's six because daddy can't fasten his laces in the morning? You know, why he might be a bit late for school in the morning because daddy can't walk as fast around the playground?
Yeah.
Or any other issues that he's got going on that's associated with my injuries? There's no one, is there? So by taking the kids, I think, to the Warburton in the summer... And all the injured kids are there, the injured guys. They can speak. Oh, my dad's only got one leg as well. My dad's only got one arm. My dad's in a wheelchair.
Well, it lets them know they're not alone as well.
Yeah, and it's that ripple effect, isn't it? Yeah. Emma realised it's not just us.
Yeah,
it's the bigger picture of the family organisation that needs support and help. And she's just the most amazing person ever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully we're going to do a podcast with Emma as well. Because we want to try and get her charity out there as well.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting as well.
And just share the great work she's been doing. So you mentioned earlier that you do motivational speaking. Is that something you're going to carry on doing? Or
I enjoy it. It's therapy for me. You know, it helps me get out of my mind what I'm thinking about and things like that.
Talking
about it helps me. It's a career that I'd recommend to any of the guys coming up. You know, if you've gone and won an Invictus gold medal or silver or bronze medal, like you say with this podcast, we've all got a story to tell, and it does inspire civilians. Mm-hmm. And speaking to like Harrogate College, this is the reality. This is the reality of conflict. This is the reality of what you're getting yourselves involved in, and I spoke at Shrivenham, the Army Defence College there, about the realities of conflict. Because this is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
And I enjoy doing it. I enjoy telling my story. And, my wife won't mind me saying, a night away from home as well doesn't do you any harm.
Sure.
A night in a hotel by yourself, just chilling, having a bit of you time. And obviously, it gives the missus a break as well, probably.
Of course, yeah.
Rather than saying, oh, just pass me that, or just have that. We know we can do it ourselves, but we know that they'll do it for us sometimes, don't we?
For me, it's my memory. I don't know what's going on with my head, but it's my memory.
Yeah.
So I'm like, where's this? She's like, it's there. Look.
Look in the cupboard. But, it's easier to ask you sometimes. Isn't it? We fall into that trap, don't we? It's easier for them to make us a cup of tea than doing it ourselves, isn't it? But I think a night away, obviously having been in the army and the people that we are, I spent 13 years living in camp on my own Monday to Friday. And always when you're thrown into this world where you're with someone 24/7, that can add a lot of strain onto that relationship as well, the things that's got going on. So
massively.
A night away in a hotel, like you say, a couple of beers, happy days.
Full night's sleep, no distractions.
Full night's sleep, yeah. last night the baby was at a dance and I woke up this morning like that. Wow, I felt good, I felt refreshed.
No wake up.
No, yeah. So I'm going to continue doing it. I want to do it more, because when you get some feedback, some messages you get from schools or from corporates, and people just saying, Andy, I'm suffering with depression, and from what you said, if you can speak to someone about how you're suffering, if I, that means I can go and speak to somebody as well. And you never know, you might just save one person's life, might you, just by telling your story.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, we all go through similar things. And if we can learn how maybe to change the way, say, you know, I'm struggling with something you've struggled with, but I'm dealing with it in a way that's not a positive way of dealing with it, but you have, I can just switch it, try the way you've dealt with it.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, it might save someone's life.
I think in a school as well, you know, if I can change, like, these young children now and their attitude maybe towards learning, towards disability, towards goal setting, if just one kid maybe sees a disabled person in a wheelchair and opens a door for them, you've changed both their worlds forever.
100%.
Haven't you? And I think we've got a bit of a duty of care to pass on this message
to
the next generation as well. Unfortunately now, you know, guys from the Second World War, not many left at all now, is there? You know what I mean? I think we're going to be the future generation of what they're going to be learning in history.
Yeah.
How can we learn lessons from this and what's happened? And I think we've got a bit of a duty of care to pass that message on.
100%. 100%. Dude, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. It's been brilliant.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a bit emotional, to be honest.
At
some point, but it's been a relief as well. So thank you for writing me down. Yeah.
No worries. Thank you for sharing the story.